Hello, welcome to Cinemaniac Jack. I'm your host, Jack. Today's guest co-host is Toria.
Hello. Yeah. Merry Christmas.
Yeah. So basically, the gist of this show is that we talk about films that I love based on whatever the topic of the episode is. And in the first half of the show, I talk to my guest about whatever the topic is. So it's Christmas month on Cinemaniac Jack. So today's topic is a favorite Christmas film from your childhood. And the movie I chose is The Muppet Christmas Carol. But first, Toria is going to tell us her favorite Christmas films from her childhood.
Yeah, so we recorded an episode like this last year about Mickey's Christmas Carol. Mm-hmm. And I know we talked about some Christmas films from childhood in that episode. So I was trying to think of some ones that we didn't touch on in that one. Mm-hmm. I don't think we talked about Miracle on 34th Street, but that movie was one of my favorites as a kid, specifically the older version from, I think, the 40s. Mm-hmm. With Natalie Wood, and just the most Santa Claus-y Santa Claus in any movie. I can't think of anyone who better represents Santa Claus in my eyes than the man who played him in the original Miracle on 34th Street. He's just so sweet and kind and, like, has that twinkle in his eye and just really buy him as Santa. Mm-hmm. Do you remember that movie?
Yeah, well, it's funny because I recently watched it for, like, the first time, like a few years ago. I mean, I always saw, like, bits and pieces of it growing up, but I didn't actually see, I didn't watch it all the way through until, like, a couple years ago. It's funny because me and Bethany watched both. We watched the original and we also watched the remake that John Hughes did in the 90s with Mara Wilson.
Mara Wilson, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's definitely, it's probably the best movie about Santa that I've seen anyway. Yeah.
It feels kind of nuanced and like he's kind of a mysterious Santa too. Mm-hmm. And I like how he's helping parents to buy presents in a way that kind of makes sense. Like, I saw this really funny, I think it was something that someone tweeted. I saw it on Instagram today. And it was like, every adult in a kid's Christmas film doesn't believe in Santa, but also never buys their kid a gift for Christmas and is not confused or surprised when there's a ton of gifts under the tree at Christmas. And it was, like, just making a joke about kind of the plot hole of, like, you know, if Santa's bringing the toys, then how are the adults who don't believe in him not, like, really confused by all of the toys under the tree?
Yeah.
But, yeah, there's something about the Santa in Miracle on 34th Street that's, like, a little bit mysterious. Like, maybe, I don't know, maybe he works kind of differently than we always hear about in the legends and myths of Santa. Yeah. Maybe his help is a little bit more nuanced. Although, I think he does talk about, like, his reindeer and stuff. I don't know. It's been a really long time since I've seen it. But anyway, yeah, something that I find really interesting is how even kids' movies about Christmas are often about adult cynicism and mm-hmm. adult regret and adult redemption. Mm-hmm. And as a kid, you watch it, and you kind of understand it at one level. And then when you watch them again as an adult, you kind of can understand them on a different level because a lot of them are actually about these kind of more grown-up themes of, like, things that people regret, finding redemption, like, unlearning cynicism, learning to become more like a kid again, mm-hmm. learning to get back in touch with their imaginations. And as a kid, it's like you're watching all these cynical adults in Christmas movies. Because the mother in Miracle on 34th Street kind of plays that character. Like, she is kind of jaded and very, very realistic and pragmatic. And she's taught her daughter, who, you know, both Natalie Wood and Mara Wilson were awesome. Mm-hmm. But, you know, they're kind of these, like, very adult-like children. Mm-hmm. And they've kind of been raised to be very practical and sensible, and Santa kind of helps bring, you know, just helps them be kids and be imaginative and playful and have a little bit more fun and hope and things like that. So, yeah, in that movie, you kind of see the kids are also almost like these jaded adults, but they're these little girls.
Yeah.
Yeah. I also was thinking about Home Alone, mm-hmm. which I can't believe I don't think we talked about that one last time, but I mean, classic 90s kid Christmas movie. Well, yeah. Family Christmas movie. What are your associations with Home Alone? Like, what do you think about when you think of Home Alone?
Well, it's funny because last week we talked about Home Alone. So I was talking about in the podcast how, like that, like, how do I explain it? Like, what I got out of it, I think why it was such a personal favorite for me was because when I first saw the film, I was the same age as Macaulay Culkin was when he did that movie. So I could kind of like project myself onto that character a little bit. And, you know, I also, well, I just think of like my childhood in general and, you know, just like laughing at all the jokes and, you know, like just loving like the angels with filthy souls and Harry and Marv getting beaten up and stuff. So, yeah.
Yeah, there's also something really interesting about how Macaulay Culkin's character, Kevin, is also kind of this like adult like kid.
Yeah.
Like, even though, you know, he does plenty of kid things, like, oh, no one's home, so I'm going to, like, eat all the junk food or whatever. But he's also adult enough to take care of himself and plot out these schemes and all of that. So there's also kind of that, like, interplay of, like, adult and childlike qualities
mm-hmm.
in a way that's also just very funny. So kind of similar to, like, the character in Miracle on 34th Street. It's like this very adult kid.
It's actually kind of reversed. It's like with her, she has to learn to be a kid again, but he has to learn to like grow up.
Yeah. But at the same time, it's like, you also just want him to get to be able to just be a kid. And I feel like when he like sees his mom again, you're like, oh yeah, he is just a little kid, you know? And he does want to be with his mom and his family. And there's also, of course, another classic theme in Home Alone that comes up in Christmas movies is people who are lonely finding connections. So, like, the neighbor. In the first movie, there's the neighbor that, you know, he thinks is, like, a serial killer or something. Or, you know, he thinks he's, like, creepy and he's scared of him.
Mm-hmm.
And in the second one, there's the woman in Central Park with the birds. And there's also that theme of, like, connection found at Christmas time for people who are lonely. So, like, kind of heavy themes. Like, Christmas movies tend to have actually kind of heavy themes when you think about it.
Yeah. As they should.
So, yeah, yeah. It's a very...
It's a complicated time of year if you're an adult.
Yeah. And for kids, too, I think. I just think for kids, like... I think a lot of kids try really hard to just push through and, like, really want to just feel the magic. But even for kids, there's, like, disappointment and sadness and, yeah, it's a very complex time of year. And another film that kind of plays with the, like, adult-child mixed-up thing in one character is Elf.
Yeah.
That was also, I was older, so I guess I was like, I think I was about 12 when Elf came out,
mm-hmm.
but that also, you know, became kind of an instant classic, and you have the character of Buddy the Elf, who is an adult, but he's very childlike.
Yeah.
And also has, again, kind of a heavy theme, like, he's never met his father, or he finds out that the elf that he thinks is his father is not his real father, Papa Elf. And he finds out that his real father is a human man in Manhattan. And Buddy is just like, you know, he's straight out of the claymation Christmas world, and he's totally naive and hopeful and annoyingly cheerful all the time. Yeah. And his dad is this, like...
Cynical
New Yorker businessman.
Yeah.
And it's also a story of... Buddy does kind... I don't know. Does Buddy have... This is an interesting question. What do you think? Does Buddy have character development in the movie?
That's a very good question. I feel like I would have to watch it again in order to really... Yeah.
He does fall in love.
I feel like he's kind of the same character from start to finish.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, I guess you could make the argument that he learns that, you know, true happiness comes from, like, self-discovery, I guess, or being content with just being you, I guess, but I don't know. Because it's like he's looking for, like, the approval of his father throughout the film, but his father kind of rejects him. But what he kind of, from what I took from it, was that at the end he kind of realized that it didn't really matter whether his father accepted him or not. Maybe I'm not right about that at all, but...
No, I think that's a very interesting reading, and I think he does... It is kind of a coming of age. Like, he has to leave home, and he could have just stayed. He could have just been like, you know what? I've got it pretty good here, but he's brave enough to leave his home, his beautiful home, and go out into the world, and he... Because I think he also wants the truth, so he's searching for truth. And he does fall in love, which, you know, he is very childlike. So for him to, like, fall in love with someone is a step in his growing up journey, I suppose.
Yeah.
And, yeah, I guess he does also learn more about human nature and, like, the complexities of human nature. But, yeah, that was another favorite for me. And, of course, our Uncle Dave worked on Elf because he did computer animation, and he worked on, I think he worked on Santa's Sleigh.
Yeah.
I believe, in Elf. So that was just, like, really fun. Like, it was very exciting to see it for so many reasons. Like, Will Ferrell is so funny. It was a really fun movie. And then it was very exciting that our Uncle Dave was part of making it.
Yeah. Did you have another film?
I'll just talk about one more. So this is, like, it leads very directly, you know, this was a big inspiration for the movie Elf, was the claymation Rudolph, the red-nosed reindeer, with Herbie, the elf who wants to be a dentist. Again, kind of heavy themes of, like, bullying, shame, being ostracized.
Not fitting in.
Not fitting in, being a misfit. And certainly in that movie, there's quite a bit of character development of people learning to embrace themselves for who they are, and other people learning to not be so prejudiced against people who are different, and learning to celebrate people's differences and appreciate them. So, again, a lighthearted Christmas film that tackles some of the darker experiences that human beings go through in life.
Yeah, definitely. So, like, when you think of these films, do you, like, does it mean anything to you, like, personally, beyond a entertainment perspective?
Yeah, I mean, I think, well, I didn't even mention It's a Wonderful Life, but that has been a huge part of our family culture, period. Like, from the time I was a kid. And that movie has just stuck with me forever. It's, again, very dark in some ways, but very beautiful. I feel like I never stop learning things from that movie. And I never get over, like, Jimmy Stewart's performance.
Yeah.
And I think that Christmas movies, to me, are just such an integral part of Christmas. Like, Christmas isn't Christmas without Christmas movies, you know?
Yeah.
And Christmas songs. Like,
it's the whole package, you know?
Yeah, the movies, the songs, the stories in general are just such an important part of Christmas. Christmas really is all about, it's about connection with people that you love, and it's also about stories, I think. There's, like, the Christmas story that it's all based on, but then there's all the different, it's like, whenever someone writes a Christmas movie or book, they're kind of riffing on some theme from, like, the original Christmas Story. And so I guess for me personally, I have many memories of watching those movies with the people I love the most, with you and our other siblings and our parents and Mima and cousins, and I have all of those personal memories. And then I just have, like, the way that I carry them, so many of the lessons are so profound, or just the messages and the stories are so kind of so much about our humanity and reminders of, like, what the best of our humanity can be. And I think I do carry them with me.
Yeah, definitely. Cool. So you ready to get into it now?
Yeah, I'm ready.
Yeah. So today we're talking about The Muppet Christmas Carol. So The Muppet Christmas Carol is a Christmas film released on December 11th, 1992. It was directed by Brian Henson. It was based off of A Christmas Carol by Charles Dickens. The screenplay was written by Jerry Jewell. The songs were written by Paul Williams. It stars Michael Caine, David Goles, Steve Whitmire, Frank Oz, and Jerry Nelson. The film is about a miser named Ebenezer Scrooge, played by Michael Caine, a moneylender working in London who is mean and stingy. He is so mean and stingy that he mistreats everyone in his life, especially his employee Bob Cratchit, played by Kermit the Frog. Returning home from work on the night of Christmas Eve, he is visited by the ghosts of his old business partners, Jacob and Robert Marley, played by Statler and Waldorf. The Marleys warn Scrooge that if he does not change his ways, like them after he dies, he will be doomed to suffer as a ghost. They tell Scrooge that he will be visited by three ghosts of Christmases past, present, and future, who will guide Scrooge into his redemption. I think this was the movie that introduced me to this story.
Yes.
This was definitely one of the first versions of it that I ever saw. Although I do remember, I also remember watching the like a black and white version from the 50s, but I can't remember who's in it. Do you remember that one as well?
I do. It really creeped me out.
Yeah, that one was really scary. I mean, this one is pretty scary too, but like in a different way.
It's eerie. Like, I definitely remember as a kid, certain, like, the music, certain scenes, some of the close-ups on Michael Caine's face. It's creepy.
Yeah, and that's what, like, I admire so much about it. It's just, like, how it, like, they weren't afraid to go there. Like, they were just, like, yeah, we're gonna, like, make this legit. Like, who cares if this is a Muppets film? We're making a decent adaptation of this material.
Yes.
And,
I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
No, go ahead. I'll remember.
Well, I don't remember, so go ahead. It doesn't matter. It was gonna suck anyway.
I love how they address it in the film. So, like, there's that interesting device that they use of having, what's his name, Gonzo?
Yeah.
And Rizzo as the narrator and kind of, I guess, the narrator's sidekick, who also is kind of, like, in the role of the audience as well. Yeah. In a way, but also a lot of comic relief. And Rizzo's like, man, this is, like, scary stuff. Should we be worried about the kids in the audience? And Gonzo says, nah, it's culture.
Yeah. You know, I just...
But I thought that was so funny.
Yeah. I mean, as a kid, they were probably my favorite part of the movie. I just... Because I remember, like, quoting them a lot.
Constantly.
As well. And I do... I think that they are important to the film as well. Not just because it's cool to have them as kind of like a, like... Greek choir of some sort, but like also like they're the ones that we can most relate to because they talk like us, you know, like they're not like they're not like Dickens cutouts, you know what I mean? Like they're
yes. I was thinking about that more this time when I watched it. It wasn't something I thought about as a kid, but because they lift so much of the dialogue from the original text, which is from the 19th century, a lot of, you know, Scrooge's dialogue, for instance, is very, you know, it's different language from what we would use. And so I think that Gonzo and Rizzo kind of, like you said, they speak more in the way that we would speak, and they kind of like help to bridge, they kind of help to bridge the different pieces of like Dickens meets Muppets, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
They kind of, and they help to kind of balance out the tone, because they strike a very particular tone. At times it is spooky, at times it is sad, but then they kind of help to bring like the Muppet humor and I think they are really important, and Rizzo is my favorite. Like, Michael Caine is fantastic, but Rizzo is my favorite part of the movie.
Yeah. Yeah, they're both fantastic. I was going to say something, but I forgot. What were you going to say?
Just also, speaking of kind of the language of it and how Gonzo and Rizzo kind of represent more of the modern audience and kind of help to translate, especially for kids, which I think is important. They also kind of make a little joke about, there's a part where when Scrooge is looking at Christmas past and he sees himself in the schoolhouse and the schoolmaster comes in and he's like talking about being a businessman and he's like, it's the American way. And then I think Gonzo is like whispers in his ear. I can't remember if it's Gonzo or another Muppet.
It's Gonzo.
But he's like, oh yeah. And then he's like, oh, sorry, it's the British way.
Yeah.
Because there's also like, you know, the Muppets are American and it's a British story and the live characters are all British. So they also kind of bridge that cultural divide too in an interesting way.
Yeah. And the thing that I was going to say about it, too, is, like, I love how, like, in recent years, so many more people have come out and said, like, what a great adaptation it is. And yeah. There actually was a person that came out recently with a video saying that he thinks that it's actually the best adaptation that has ever been made of A Christmas Carol, which I thought was really fascinating. I mean, this is probably my favorite version that I've seen of A Christmas Carol. So, yeah, to hear that is great. And at the time, too, like, it wasn't really, like, a success. Like, it kind of, I mean, I don't, I think it was a critical success, but it wasn't a box office success. Because, believe it or not, it came out around the same time as Home Alone 2 and Aladdin. And Aladdin, I think. And those two movies, like, were, like, topping the...
Yeah.
We're at the top of the box office, so yeah, it kind of got swept under the rug a little bit.
Right.
But yeah.
Yeah, go ahead. I mean, I think that it does capture something about the story. I mean, I'm trying to think of the different versions I've seen. I've seen the Mickey one, Mickey's Christmas Carol. I've seen the Patrick Stewart one a long time ago. I saw that black and white 1950s one a long time ago. I think there was a newer one that came out here with Taylor Swift's boyfriend, Joe Alwyn.
Oh, yeah.
I think. that's how I know him, Taylor Swift's boyfriend. He's an actor. But I think, like, I was reading the book recently, and I do think that there is a fair amount of humor in it and energy in it that the Muppets version really captures. Like, Dickens' language is just, oh my gosh, it's, like, crackling with energy. I don't know how else to describe it. Like, if you read the actual text, it's so descriptive. It's just, like... It's spooky, it's poetic, it's so, like, there's so much imagery, it's just such interesting language, like, when he says, like, darkness is cheap, and Scrooge liked it, or I remember as a kid being so struck by Scrooge being, like, talking to Marley and Marley and saying, you're just a crumb of cheese.
Mm-hmm.
I think that they do kind of, between the music and all of the jokes, I think it definitely captures some of that, like, energy and, I think, humor that Dickens had. I do. And there is, like, there is the sadness that kind of balances it in an important way. Although I will say that, like, the characters of Marley and Marley are probably one of the most different elements, because in the book, Marley is incredibly mournful and regretful.
Mm-hmm.
And in this movie, Marley and Marley are still kind of joking and kind of almost like high-fiving each other for like all the terrible things they did, which is very funny in the movie, but definitely very different from the tone in Dickens' book, where Marley is extremely like ashamed of how he lived in his life. So that is like one of the bigger differences, I think.
Yeah. Well, I was going to say too that that's another reason why it's so great that Gonzo and Rizzo are like narrating it, because it keeps the text of what Dickens wrote in his novel, and you get to hear it in the movie, whereas I think most adaptations you don't really get that, because, you know, it's a movie, but in this one you do because they're narrating it. So that's another great reason why, you know.
That's so true. I love that about the narration, because then we get that those lines like "darkness was cheap," like because so much of the obviously they kept some of the dialogue too, but so much of the description is really rich and really fun to read and just so well written that I think the narrators adding in some of that language is a great element of this film.
Yeah, and I think another reason why this. It's such a great story too, is because it's also like, it's not just like a Christmas story. Like, it's also, and other people have commented on this too, but it really is like a Gothic horror story, you know, like, and you know, this film, I think, does a really good job showing that. I mean, obviously there are other films that kind of go darker than this one does. Which is fine, you know, because it's a Gothic horror story. But also, I do think sometimes they go a little bit too far with it, but this film definitely does, like, the perfect balance of it.
Yeah, I think, you know, Victorians, like, they had this beloved tradition of sitting around the fire and telling ghost stories at Christmas. So, I think to them, this would have been like, oh, wow, he really elevated something that was already very popular, and it would have kind of, like, made sense to them. It fit into this, like, genre, kind of. And for us, it's not... Now, it's more like there are so many stories that are riffing on A Christmas Carol specifically, but we don't, like, tell ghost stories at Christmas. It's more like there are so, so, so many versions of, you know, on the Hallmark Channel and all those things, of someone being visited by a spirit, or like getting to see their past life or see what their life could have been if they had made different choices. So a lot of that, not paranormal element, what's the word? Kind of magical. There are magical elements, but for the Victorians, like, they loved ghost stories in general. So, yeah, it definitely is. I mean, it's spooky.
Yeah.
It's spooky. And Victorians were very obsessed with the occult, too, so.
Yeah. So now I think we have to talk about Michael Caine as Scrooge.
Yep.
I mean, yeah, again, not only is this my favorite version of A Christmas Carol, but he's also my favorite Scrooge.
Yes, he is Scrooge. I saw, again, another, like, meme that I saw this week on the internet. It was, like, a picture of Michael Caine as Scrooge, and it was, like, you know, the director of Muppet's Christmas Carol saying, you know, this is a kid's film, so you can kind of have some fun with it, you know, and then Michael Caine, it's, like, it says, like, I'm going to play this as serious as a car accident.
Yeah.
But I think that commitment is crucial to this film being what it is. His commitment to playing it as if he were in a traditional, you know, BBC adaptation is absolutely crucial to the success of this film, I think. And he just plays very well both the curmudgeon side of Scrooge and the part of Scrooge that taps into who he was before he got hardened to the world. Like, when you see him kind of light up and lighten up, it's just really precious to behold. So, yeah, what are your thoughts on Michael Caine as Scrooge?
Well, yeah, I mean, like, his approach to kind of playing it straight, like, it's like, technically, like, that it shouldn't work. But for some reason, yeah, it does. And it really, like, it really, like, makes the movie so much better. And the thing that, what I'm so impressed by, I think, most about his performance is how well he was able to be, like, in the first part of it, so completely, like, intimidating and scary and, like, angry. And then to go to, like, being really, like, vulnerable and sad and, yeah, like, almost kind of relatable, you know?
Yeah.
It's really, it's amazing. Like, the what he does, yeah, in that film is truly amazing.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I do. I think it does, I think it encapsulates what humans want to believe about our ability to change and to grow and even to, like, unlearn the things that have made us cynical, or at least balance them with the parts of ourselves that maybe we've forgotten a little bit, and his ability to embody that, I think you can't help but, like, feel a little bit hopeful about humanity.
Yeah. And the thing that's, like, the thing that I find very interesting about Scrooge as a character as well is, like, how, like, very oblivious he is about his cruelty in the beginning. Because, yeah, like, because you see, like, that he has many opportunities from other people to, like, have a happy life and stuff, but, like, he shuts them out, you know?
Yeah.
Like, especially, like, with his nephew, although that's a little bit, that's kind of complicated, because I think it's, he shuts out his nephew because he reminds him of his sister.
Yeah.
Which this version doesn't, this version doesn't address, but, yeah.
Yeah, I do miss the layer about his sister in this version. I think that it says a lot when he is with the Ghost of Christmas Past and he sees himself as a young schoolboy and he's alone on Christmas year after year and he says, "Nothing ever changed." And the ghost says, "But you did." And I think that just that line, "Nothing ever changed," to me, it was like, oh, that's depression. Like, depression is nothing will ever get better. And unfortunately for him, like, he was just a kid and he didn't have the power yet to change his life in the ways that could have really helped him. And so that was his experience, that nothing ever changes or gets better. And that just went on year after year after year. And he had to do what he had to do to survive it, which was harden himself. Because
yeah,
it was would have been just way too painful year after year after year to watch all the other kids go home for Christmas and have loving families and all of that. So I think that line really struck me this time around. But then it also struck me that when he returns with the ghost, or when he returns to his bed and then the second ghost comes, the Ghost of Christmas Present, Scrooge makes his first joke that isn't, like, super mean. He mm-hmm. makes, like, a joke that feels lighthearted, and he actually smiles when he makes it. I mean, it's still kind of in his vein. It's something about, you know, the ghost has, like, this big feast and he's like, oh, it must be quite a grocery order or something like that, but he's like smiling. And it's like, oh, Scrooge just tried to make a joke to someone. And yeah. It wasn't, like, mean. And it's, like, already just, I feel like seeing himself as a kid really affected him. And I find that so fascinating because that's a technique that's used in therapy so often, is helping people, like, potentially even visually imagine themselves as a child and imagine, like, what was missing and try to connect with themselves, like the feelings that they had as a kid, and try to like feel them and then offer themselves what they really needed in that moment with the safe relationship of a therapist. So Dickens was kind of doing something that like is almost like a form of what therapists do now.
Yeah.
In his story, you know.
Yeah. Well, was therapy even a thing then? Probably not.
I don't think so, but I think it goes to show that there's like wisdom sometimes from, you know, from a long time ago that had something timeless to it. There's something about letting yourself remember things like that can be painful, but it can also really help you be who you want to be, I think.
Yeah. And another thing that I think that this film does really well too is showing, like the contrast between Scrooge and the Muppets. Like I love how, like, whenever they're shown together, like you see like just how like big he is compared to the Muppets. So, which makes him all the more like intimidating and stuff, and it's done really well. And the person that made this video about it recently said that what he saw into it was that he felt that like one of the reasons why Scrooge is, I mean, he's just mean in general, but like one of the reasons why he's so mean to the Muppets is because he doesn't see them, like, because they're not, like, the same species as him. Like, he doesn't even see them as, like, worthy of the same treatment as a person. And he thought that, like, maybe I'm, like, reading too much into it, but that's kind of, like, what I got from it. Which I thought was kind of, which probably wasn't true, but I found it kind of interesting.
When he throws the wreath at the little, I don't even know what it is. It's, like, the little bunny type creature who's trying to sing for a penny. And then you see the creature, like, shivering in, like, newspaper at night. Ugh.
Yeah.
You know, actually, on that topic of, like, Scrooge and the Muppets and, like, the kind of the contrast between him and the Muppets, I'm curious if you came across anything. I did not. But about why they chose to have the Ghost of Christmas Past be neither a human nor a Muppet, but, like, an animated, like, ghostly figure. I thought that was interesting. I had never really thought about it before I watched it this time, but I was like, huh, interesting that the Ghost of Christmas Past is like played, like could have been, I don't know, could have been a Muppet, could have also been somewhat of a humorous figure, but it's not humorous, not a Muppet. What do you think about that?
Well, that's interesting that you should bring that up, because I think, because I was watching a video about it, and what I remember them saying that, the face of the Ghost of Christmas Past was, I think, one of the puppets Muppets or something that they had used, like, in one of their other films, but, yeah, like, it's, like, she's not quite a Muppet, she's kind of also, like, half CGI as well.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it's interesting. And I do really like, too, that they made, like, new Muppets for the ghosts and not just, like, other Muppet characters. Because they do, because, right. like, with, like, when you see stuff, like, with the Mickey Mouse ones, like, they use, like, other characters to play the ghosts. Which I think that they were going to do initially, but then for some reason they decided to make just like make new characters out of the ghosts, which I really like that they did.
Yeah. Yeah, I thought that was really interesting. And I think the fact that they didn't turn the Ghost of Christmas Past into, like, a funny, like, hammy... You know, like, Marley and Marley, they could have kept mournful, but they made them kind of, like, funny.
Yeah.
But the Ghost of Christmas Past, they kept that all kind of more emotional, I guess, by not making that, like, a funny, silly Muppet character.
Mm-hmm.
And I did just want to mention... The version of the film that I watched on Disney Plus did not have the song When Love Is Gone.
Yeah.
And I was preparing myself to be emotionally destroyed by that song, a la When She Loved Me in Toy Story 2.
Yeah.
And then when it didn't happen, I was like, wait, but this song always emotionally destroyed me as a child. Where did it go? Did I dream it? And then I read that they took it out because they thought kids wouldn't like it. But it was always in the version I watched as a kid.
Yeah, well, I think that they did... They put it back into the movie when it was released on video.
Okay.
So, yeah. But yeah, I was really disappointed that it wasn't in there because yeah. I love that song. And Brian Henson really loved that song too. And he wanted it to be kept into the movie. And even Michael Caine said that he really loved that song. And that was his favorite part of the movie. And they didn't keep it in. But then, you know, luckily they put it back in, I guess, like in videos and DVD releases. And by the way, the songs were written by Paul Williams. Do you know who Paul Williams is?
No, I don't.
Well, Paul Williams was a singer-songwriter in the 70s, and he wrote The Rainbow Connection.
Oh, you know,
the famous song that Kermit sings. And I mean, I kind of found out about him through a movie called Phantom of the Paradise. And I was really shocked because I had no idea who he was until I had watched that movie. And then, like, I guess that same year when I had discovered Phantom of the Paradise and we put on that movie again, and I saw the credits open and it said songs by Paul Williams. And I was like, oh, holy shit. I had no idea that he wrote those songs, but it makes sense, I guess, because he wrote The Rainbow Connection. But yeah, like, it's, yeah, I love those songs, too. Like, they're just so great. Maybe, like, because I'm biased, because I grew up with them, but, like...
I think they're beautiful. I mean, The Rainbow Connection makes me cry. When Love Is Gone, yeah, it hit me in the same way that When She Loved Me hit me from Toy Story 2, just... As a kid, it's like devastatingly sad.
Yeah.
But beautiful. It's a beautiful song.
Yeah.
Yeah. Again, very heavy stuff.
Yeah. I mean, it's... Because, like, I remember when I was watching it, like, I couldn't help but sing along to the part when the Ghost of Christmas Present song, I don't remember the title, but you know, like,
oh, yes, that one's so, yes, yeah. I love that one. That's my favorite, like, upbeat one.
Yeah. And I love the opening song too.
Yeah. That's a good one as well.
Me and Felicia always sing the, like the opera, well, not opera part, but like, yeah. The carolers part.
Yes. Yeah.
And you're just like, there must be a sweet man inside. And they're like, nah.
Yeah, the music is really fantastic, too, in that film.
Yeah.
And it does add an element that isn't in other, you know, most other adaptations. And it adds, like, that whole other... level of nostalgia when I watch it now.
Yeah. And I think that they should, like, I wish that they would actually do, like, a show, like, with those songs in it. Like, but, like, with the
yeah.
same, like, maybe they don't even have to have the Muppets in it, but they would have, like, the same script and, like, have the same songs. Like, I would love that. Because
yeah.
I know technically there's already a musical of it, but I just think that this one is so much better, no offense to the other version.
Yeah, and it also, like, it really helps to add some of that, like, joy. And it makes it that much more sad, like, when Scrooge sees what people are saying about him, you know? Like, because he gets kind of, like, happy. He's, like, in the middle of them singing that song, and...
Yeah, well, I think that's also... Also kind of technically the first time where it kind of clicks with him that it's like,
yeah.
it's like, I'm a jerk and like nobody likes me. Cause he doesn't really, I mean, I guess maybe he suspects that people don't like him, but he doesn't really like care.
Yeah.
But then when he starts to like learn like how to have like fun and stuff. And then like he sees his own nephew and his wife like make fun of him at that party, that part is always like it's kind of it's so gut-wrenching
because he's like getting really into it.
Yeah,
I think that it really shows you that it's so easy for us as humans to justify things to ourselves and just kind of like put our blinders on and tell ourselves a story about like why we are right and why we are justified, and to, like, forget things and just kind of push things out of our mind and out of our view.
Mm-hmm.
And when you are forced to see things, it can be incredibly painful, but it can sometimes be the only thing that would actually make you do something that would improve your life. So, like, as much as it's painful, it might actually make you a kinder person. And I think that's part of what we see with Scrooge, is like he just gets forced to see, and he can't really deny it anymore. He can't like justify it to himself. Something from the book that I think is really powerful that isn't in this adaptation is when Marley visits him, Scrooge looks out the window as Marley drifts away out the window into the night, and there's all these other ghosts like Marley, like with their chains, and the ghosts can see all of these people suffering, like people who are homeless and people who are poor and sick suffering on the street, and they can't help.
Mm-hmm.
And that is their suffering that they actually really want to help now, and they can't, and that's why they're suffering so much. And that just like really struck me this time. Like, it was really easy for them in life to just, like you said, to like dehumanize, like whether it's because they were Muppets or because they were poor people or, you know, whatever stories, like Scrooge calls people, I forget what he says. He's like, I can't afford to give money to people who are, I don't know. He doesn't say lazy, but something like that.
Yeah.
And it's just really easy to dehumanize people and not truly see them. And then it's like the punishment of these greedy people is that they can finally actually see, like truly see the suffering, and they can't do anything about it. And they know that they could have when they were alive, and they didn't.
Yeah. And the thing that I always think about too, like it, like just like watching any version of it really, or reading the book, is that like, I feel like, you know, Scrooge, I mean, it's funny because they say at the beginning that maybe, like, they're like, nah, there's no sweet man inside. But I think there had to have been, like, a nice person inside him all along. Otherwise, I don't think he ever would have changed. You know, because yeah. I feel like a truly mean and cruel, careless person would never change, regardless right. of what they see. But the fact that he was able to, I think, is proof that he really could be a good person deep down.
Yeah, you know? I mean, I think that's why it's so important that we see and that he like revisits his past, because he didn't always used to be like that. It was like, I think, kind of a defense that he built up against a lot of pain, and he was kind of this neglected child. And it's a very strange thing to be someone who has so much money and who doesn't want to light any lamps in his house and wants to eat bread and cheese. Like, it's one thing, you know, we can almost understand more a super rich person who, like, lives in opulence. But, like, a rich person who lives like a poor person, what's going on there, you know?
Yeah.
There's clearly something going on. So, he's a really fascinating character.
Yeah. And I find it so fascinating just from like a psychological viewpoint as an adult, you know, because like when I watched it as a child, like I just, you know, like you enjoy it for like the just like the ride and the supernatural stuff, but then like when it's like, yeah, but then it's like when you're an adult, you're like, yeah, no, this hits different for me.
Okay, I have a question that's like probably hard to answer.
Mm-hmm.
But, and yeah, if you don't have an answer, that's okay. But if you, so tonight, right, tonight's the night before Christmas Eve. If you, like, went to sleep and a ghost visited you,
mm-hmm.
what do you think they would be trying to show you? And, like, how do you think you would be different on Christmas Day?
I don't know. I really don't know.
It's an interesting question, though, isn't it?
Yeah.
To ask yourself?
Yeah.
I think that maybe mine would have to do with, like, maybe generosity of a different kind. Like, I think I'm generous in different ways, but sometimes, like, when I'm fearful, which is a lot, because I'm, like, a very fearful person, I'm not as generous with how I don't know, with, like, choices that I, like, I get more stingy with, not money, but just, like, whether I give food of the day, or how I talk to people, or, like, what I, yeah, how much I choose to, like, go out into the world and try to, like, be with people and help people versus just kind of, like, protecting myself. So maybe something about that.
Yeah. I also, like, I always wonder, too, like, why the spirits care so much about Scrooge being a better person. I mean, I guess, like, I mean, I always just kind of assume, too, that the whole thing kind of came down to Tiny Tim. Because, like, if he doesn't become a good person, then Tiny Tim will die. So I thought maybe that was kind of their mission, was to kind of save Tiny Tim. But, like, I don't know.
And I always think, like, it's actually a pretty generous thing that Marley, or in this case Marley and Marley, warns Scrooge, because, like, a person who isn't being generous would just be like, well, whatever, you can, like, roam the earth with your chains forever, too. Like, but the fact that Marley tried to help him and warn him, like, you have to change or else you're going to have the same fate, is quite a generous thing, right? Like,
yeah,
that's pretty generous, like, that he would do that. But yeah, I wonder the same thing, like, why Scrooge? But I love that idea that it's actually for Tiny Tim.
Yeah.
Was there anything from The Ghost of Christmas Present, The Ghost of Christmas Future, or from the ending of the movie that really, really sticks out to you as something you had a thought or question about, or something you wanted to point out?
I also, well, what I really love about this version too is how like, kind of the relation, well, I don't know if you would call it a relationship, but, well, I'll just call it that for now. The relationship that Scrooge kind of develops with the Ghost of Christmas Present. Because in most versions, they actually don't like each other, like, at all. But I actually kind of like how in this version they do. I don't know, like, to me that's kind of more... it kind of makes sense, because it's like, well, if they don't like each other, then why would Scrooge even, like, change? Like, why would he, you know?
That kind of almost goes back to, like, my therapist metaphor. Like, you have to like your therapist in order to, like, really be able to make progress with them. And it's almost like the ghost is, like, Scrooge's therapist, in a way. But yeah, I love The Ghost of Christmas Present. He's just so jolly and just someone you'd want to hang out with.
Yeah. And I think that is something that this, in some ways, them being Muppets makes it it captures Dickens' vision of it, I think, so well by them being like these animated Muppets, you know, especially the character of the Ghost of Christmas Present, because it just, I don't know, it just makes the feelings you get from those characters, I feel, stay very close to like what his vision was, if that makes any sense.
I really do think that when you, if you read it, it's just so alive, and I think this adaptation captures so many of the different layers that are in the original story. And then adds a lot, takes a lot of different turns, or not different turns, but, you know, adds different things, makes some changes, but captures a lot of the heart of it. And then just having Rizzo there saying things like, "God bless my broken little body," is just icing on the cake.
Yeah. I mean, I just think that it's amazing that, like, this story has had the longevity that it's had, and that there's just been so many adaptations of it, to the point where we had, like, a Muppets version of it, and the fact that it's actually good as well is just, like, incredible. But I think the reason why it's lasted so long is because, like, not just... because, you know, I mean, Christmas never becomes irrelevant because we always celebrate it. And it's something that we always... I mean, it's something that we think about often, but it's also... Again, I think it taps into something deep within ourselves, you know. And that's why we always go back to it.
You know? Yeah. He must have just... I don't know. He went into, like, another realm when he wrote this story. And I think, unfortunately, there's, like... unfortunately, we are still in the throes of a form of capitalism that creates that inequity that he shows in the story. And we still see so much greed and so many people hoarding wealth and not helping those who are suffering and not creating better conditions in the world. But also just... in an even more timeless way, I think it just taps into, like, what does it mean to be human and to live a good life? And so much of it is about being connected to other people and giving and loving people and feeling things. And even if it's painful, also, you know, you can't, if you harden yourself, you can't love. If you harden yourself, you can't, you might not feel pain, but you won't feel joy either. And I think Dickens just captures, like, what it means to just be, like, really open-hearted. And it's just so beautiful and, like, aspirational.
Yeah, definitely. Well, this has been Cinemaniac Jack. I'm your host, Jack. Today's guest co-host was Toria.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah. Merry Christmas, everybody.
Merry Christmas.
See you next time.